You're listening to the Tech Talks podcast, a podcast by the Technology Education Collaborative. Tech is an Arizona nonprofit that empowers everyday people with useful information about today's extraordinary technology.
Welcome to the Tech Podcast for Day in the Life of an Engineer or Technologist. This podcast, we ask 5 questions of everybody that comes on. They're the same questions because every job is different and there's interesting things to learn from all of the different answers. So with that, let's begin. Firstly, what is your title and position, as well as who are you?
Hi, my name is Leonard Pinnock, and my title and position, I'm a software developer, is my title. They don't really have a more specific title at the department I'm in. The department I work for is the mainframe department, so I'm a mainframe software developer and maintainer, I guess you could say.
We've had some software developers on this show before. What's the difference between, say, a web developer and what you're doing with being a mainframe developer?
Yeah, so a lot of the big difference, from my understanding, between mainframe and, say, a web developer is mainframe is primarily a bulk data processor. It doesn't do typically live services that you might see on a website where the customer interacts and expects a response in the next 10 seconds or so. Mainframe is primarily used for processing gargantuan amounts of data, I'm talking like 10 million records in a particular file. Then from there, the languages that they use are a bit more specific in that regard. And one of the big things with mainframe currently is the languages that they use were first developed at this point like 70 years ago. And they have been marked as archaic or defunct or no longer used incorrectly.
Wow. So with those differences, what does your day-to-day look like?
My day-to-day job typically involves research and repair for applications that have been running for 20 or 30 years. A common thing that happens, for example, is a program was designed in mind of somebody said, oh, well, we'll never have a count higher than 10,000, so I don't need to put a sixth digit in there. And lo and behold, here we are 30, 40 years later, and we do need that sixth digit. So when the program tries to run, it kind of overflows and throws a whole bunch of errors and panics and that sort of thing. Another element of my day-to-day job is managing problems caused by data that's sent to us inaccurately. It could be missing data, it could be in a different format, all sorts of things like that. And it might make it through a couple steps of the process, but it'll stop in the middle of a very important process that could involve millions of dollars being delayed by an entire day if it's not fixed in the next hour.
Wow. That's a lot of data processing and a lot of things flowing in and out of wherever your data is stored and however it works. With that, what's your favorite thing about your job?
Well, for me, the favorite thing about the job is I'm kind of a puzzle kind of guy. I like solving puzzles. I like, running into a situation where there's sort of an incomplete explanation of what's going on and sort of sleuthing my way through it and figuring out what the puzzle and the fix is and then putting it in place and seeing it work. So, as a hobby, I kind of play a lot of puzzle games, and this kind of ties right in with what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis.
Troubleshooting, finding that one little change, and then that's your favorite part. What's your least favorite part about your job? Because no matter how fun any job is, there's always something you don't like about it.
Yeah, of course. So I actually have 2 major things that are my least favorite about the job.
Go ahead.
The number one least favorite thing I would say is challenges in talking to and explaining technology to people who are not very familiar with advanced technology. They certainly can use a computer and their phone, but they don't necessarily understand very much about how they work or some terminology or the way data moves and stuff like that. And so at times it's really difficult to find a way to explain what the problem is or how it's happening or what you're even trying to do to fix their problem in a way that they can understand. Just sort of tech literacy challenges is always it's not super fun to explain something 15 different ways to somebody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually you get there, and you know, there's some fun to it, finally figuring out how a specific person you talk to on a regular basis, how they comprehend things, and being able to, you know, sort of tailor your explanations to the way they explain it.
Going back to what you earlier said about mm-hmm. finding that puzzle piece and
oh, yeah.
how it fits in,
yeah.
figuring out how to explain, like you just said, to that person.
Yeah, and because of the critical nexus, I guess you could say that the mainframe is, in terms of what data it deals with, you know, I deal with data from basically every department of a multi-billion-dollar company. And, you know, that's the number of people I have to talk to in different departments that understand things different ways. You know, it could be a couple months before I talk to the same person again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's still that challenge. It's sort of that silver lining of, you know, finding that solution for the understand. The second thing that I like the least about my job on a day-to-day basis is an artifact, I guess you could say, of the age of what a mainframe is and how long it's been around. Just because of the very nature of what a mainframe is and when they were first implemented and how long they've been used, there was, many years ago at this point, difficulty in data space. You know, I remember growing up and I had a 8 megabyte hard drive and I thought this was huge and stuff like that. And, you know, nowadays if you say 8 megabytes, people are like, well, that's nothing, right? So one of the challenges that happened during that era of computing is they were very delicate about making sure they were using as little data as possible. So when you're working with a program that was developed in 1974, there's no notes in the program. The variable names are often 1 to 2 characters long. It's certainly a huge challenge to work with them. And in addition to that, because of the premium that electronic data storage was, all of the documentation for that would have been on paper. And there's no guarantee that that paper made it 50 years through a shelf to get to me.
No guarantee at all. And like you said earlier, do we need that 7th digit or 6th digit? That takes up a lot of space when added across all of those various entries of data. And now you're dealing with data is cheap. Data storage is cheap. But this was made in a time when that was not the case.
Exactly. Very much true. So there's a lot of repair work, maintenance work that I do is, you know, sort of updating things that from the nature and the habits and the way things are written, from premium data storage limitations to you have as much data as you want.
If someone was looking to get a job like yours, what is the one practical thing you'd want someone pursuing this position to know?
So in terms of trainable skills rather than soft skills?
Both work.
Well, we'll start with the soft skill, right? The soft skills that are fairly critical to this is working to basically solve puzzles without all the information, right? There's going to be a lot of working with incomplete information where you don't have a manual, you don't have an explanation in what you're looking at, and you have to take a look at thousands of lines of code that don't have any comments, that don't even have variable names that are complete, and sort of work out what is this even doing. So being able to, you know, take a look at something and sort of, you know, like somebody puts a gizmo in front of you and you're like, oh, well, what does this button do? What does this lever do? And sort of being able to poke around at it and figure that out fairly easily, that's the soft skill that you would kind of need for this job, I think. There's a second soft skill that goes with that, which is just a precision in the way that you communicate in written form. You know, not only do you need to very carefully explain to the people that don't work in the department, but computer languages are very particular about the way that you talk to them. You have to describe things in very specific, literal, exact terms, using the right words, and there's a difference between and if, even though they technically meet the same scenario, and being able to sort of work out, well, how do I describe a way to do something in a really precise manner is another soft skill, I think, that would greatly benefit you.
Yeah.
As far as hard skills, trainable skills, I think the main one that would be beneficial to you looking to get into this type of field is Knowledge is related to the database. So familiarity with database management. One of my coworkers recently just got his degree in database structure administration or something to that title. And, you know, those kinds of trainable skills where you're working with database logic and SQL and other languages that are designed around managing enormous amounts of data and manipulating those large amounts of data. Those are the hard skills that would more greatly benefit you. There's some, you know, benefit to, you know, knowing everything, right? Computer languages.
Yep.
The older computer languages, of course, if you know those, you know, that's certainly more valuable to somebody who has a mainframe running. And the main languages I would mention in that circumstance, first of all, this is COBOL. The next one is PL1, so it's PL/1, sometimes called PLI. That is a language that was developed around the same time as COBOL, and some locations decided to go with PL1, and some locations decided to go with COBOL, and then by the time you reached about the 2000s, most of them converted to COBOL, but there's still PL1 stuff out there. And the last one is Rex. Rex will be very useful, and most mainframes can work with Rex. So that is very useful to query.
Makes sense. Thank you very much for your time. Before you head out, do you have any personal projects, organizations you're involved with, or technical interests you'd like to share?
Well, in terms of with technology, I don't really have a whole lot of side hobbies in technology that I work with. I don't really have any groups that I work with at this time.
Cool.
You know, I'm obviously here because I'm interested in doing it, but sometimes it's hard to find groups in that regard, just the very nature of social structures making it difficult to find social structures. And additionally, like with the field that I work in, it's really hard to find, I don't know if I want to use the word peers, but people who could be my coworker, people who would be sitting aside me in the department, because a lot of them are retiring. Just last Friday, a coworker of mine retired after working in the department for over 40 years.
Wow.
So, you know, that's, I think in the past year, I think three of them have retired. And so that's sort of where people like me are getting our jobs, is these systems are still running. They still need to be maintained. And people are, for lack of a better phrase, aging out.
That they are. Well, thank you very much for your time. I enjoyed being able to ask you these questions. Hopefully it was fun answering them on your end as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
This podcast was recorded at the Advanced Cyber Systems Lab at Gateway Community College. If you are interested in having a podcast, you are welcome to come in and use the studio free of charge. You can also come in and 3D print, take apart a server, play with AI, and pretty much do all sorts of fun, cool, techie stuff. Even if you don't know how, come on in. Someone here does, and they'll be happy to show you.